excuse me momentarily. I would like to ask the panelists, if you are in this final panel, to please come up to the front table and take a seat, and we will be starting momentarily. So any of the panelists who are here, please do come up to the front as quickly as you can, and we'll be starting momentarily. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for coming back after lunch for our exciting final panel. And so I would ask all of you to please take a seat, and we are going to get started here in just a moment. So please come in and take your seat, and thank you for coming back to join us.
While everybody is coming in to take their seats, I think we should give our lunch sponsors one more round of applause.
So this is the last session, and it's focused on signing services. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we're going to change the order from what was published just slightly. Matt Larson has to be in two places at nearly the same time. So we'll start with Matt, and then we'll proceed with the original order. Matt, you ready?
Yes.
Good. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. So I wanted to talk about VeriSign's DNSSEC signing service. So next slide, please. You're probably going to hear over and over again what a signing service is, but not surprisingly, it converts unsigned zones to signed zones. Ours, like probably many others, is a bump in the wire using zone transfer. So we pull the zone from the customer's designated server, sign it, they pull it from us, and they do whatever they want with it. So we only sign. We're not hosting it for this particular service. There's nothing to be done after setup, and the manual setup, the provisioning process is fairly straightforward. So in terms of the bullets here, what it provides, obviously signs the entire zone. Key rollover is automatic. I really get the sense you're going to hear the same presentation several times in a row. I'm the lucky one. I get to go first. We're committing
Excuse
to...
me, Matt, could you just say what's different from yours from everybody else's?
All right. We're committing to 3.9's uptime, and we're also committing to an SLA for 10 minutes signing. So in other words, from the time that the customer sends us a notify, we'll send to them a notify back within 10 minutes, giving them their sign zone back. But in production, as you can see, we're running 60 to 90 seconds for that, so much, much faster. And everybody has their own keys. We're using good crypto hygiene here. We're not sharing keys. Here's the architecture. Nothing remarkable here. There's basically two management lines here. One to the to the unsigned master. I mean, the reason this says registrar is that it. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself with this slide. The service presumes that this is going to be operated by registrars. That might be what's different than everyone else's. The target audience. This is for registrars, as I'll explain for a moment. So the reason there are two gray management arrows. The one from the registrar who needs to gain some weight, pointing at the master server. That is to get the zone content there, and then the one pointing to the red cloud is to actually provision the signing service, saying, please start signing acme.com and pull it from this particular server. Next slide, please. So those gray management arrows, there's both a SOAP web service or a web-based GUI, so the registrar can take their choice. In terms of some DNSSEC details, we're re-signing the entire zone every single time. So the presumption is that most of these zones are going to be small enough that it's just easier to re-sign the entire zone than it is to do some sort of incremental thing. And every time we re-sign it, the signature validity period is 14 days. And then we do refresh at 7 days. I don't need to read the details to you on the bottom of the slide. It's very, very typical parameters for key size and rollover intervals. We do give the customers a choice of NSEC or NSEC3, and we are storing the keys in a FIPS 140-2 level 3 HSM. So that's a decision we decided that, even though we're going to support lots of zones, we wanted to use HSM to do the right thing for key storage. Next slide, please. So it's available to ICANN-accredited registrars. The goal of the service, and I suppose I should have said this on the first slide rather than the last slide, is to make it easier for registrars to make it easier for registrars to DNSSEC enable their hosting services. So the presumption is that there might be registrars out there who already have a DNS hosting service that they operate, but making that DNSSEC capable could require a lot of work. So instead, if they're willing to put a bump in the wire zone transfer based solution in place, then the idea is with fewer changes they could DNSSEC enable their hosting service. So this is all part of our attempt to make it as easy as possible and to be as encouraging as possible to registrars when it comes to DNSSEC adoption. You know, we didn't want anyone to be able to say, well, I would add it support, but then I have all these customers that I'm also hosting their zones, and if they DNSSEC enable, then I can't host their signed zone. So there's a free trial period, absolutely free, as in beer and speech, and that's for those are for VeriSign TLDs. And if the registrar wants to take, you know, if they have a .org, for example, if they're hosting a .org domain, that will cost them $2 per year, and that's it. Thank you.
Excellent. So in deference to your schedule here, let me ask if there are any questions for Matt, and then we'll hold off questions for other people until we're at the end. So come on up. We'll do you have time for?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for accommodating me. I appreciate it.
Is this on?
Oh, now it is, yeah. My name is Roy Arends of Nominet. Matt, one question. Are you going to store the actual private DNS keys on the HSM, or are you going to use an encrypted store where you put the key of the encrypted store on the HSM?
No, the keys are actually stored in the HSM as we're storing the encrypted blob of the key outside, and it's sent to the HSM for the actual signing.
Okay, gotcha. That to me is secure enough, but this is the way you gain speed.
Right. We're storing these opaque. The keys become encrypted opaque blobs.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Hi. I have a question. Do you limit the zone file size of the domains you sign?
Can you? State your name so we can put it.
Okay. Sabine from DNIC. Do you limit the zone file size of the domains you sign, and does that affect the SLA you actually propose?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if any of my colleagues. I think I'm here solo. I think the two people who could have answered that question are now not here. So I apologize. I would imagine there's a limit, but I don't know what it is.
Good. I think we've reached a stable point here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This will of course make a big difference. The signing of COM and unveiling all this. So when we reconvene in Singapore, there's going to be an ability to look back just briefly and see where we are in all of this. So thank you. Before we proceed with the rest of the speakers, I want to put in a little commercial. A lot of work goes into planning these sessions. We have had the benefit of two volunteers over the past couple of years who have sat through the sessions and come up to me afterwards and said, yeah, this was okay, but we could make it better. And I said, well, great, you're elected here. So Marcus was first, and then Simon fell into the same trap, and we swallowed him up as well. Marcus has wandered off, and we have openings. So any of you who are think you've got useful ideas about how to keep these sessions live fresh, please don't be at all bashful or hesitant. And it's a good group. We enjoy working with each other, and the workload is approximately a call once a week. And the sort of incremental planning, and when the meetings are bunched up and come a little faster than usual, like the Singapore meeting is coming within 3 months, we tend to look ahead a little bit. So we're doing a little bit of advanced planning. So feel free to raise your hand or come up quietly, or just be a little slow about leaving the room. We'll catch up with you. Thank you. Moving right along, Jim Galvin from Afilias is next.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, good slides. Next slide, please. So Last year in June, when we had launched signdelegations.org, obviously the next big step was to think about what it would take to get registrars on board. Obviously, we've made good progress even since then because the route has been signed. There's now the number is actually over 70 TLDs are signed, and as Steve was reporting earlier this morning, there's variability as to what operational really means, and hopefully we'll have some more consistent data going forward with those statistics. And there's still a lot to come. And we were focused specifically on registrars because, obviously, a lot of the other things don't make as much sense if you don't have signed domains themselves to work with. So next slide, please. We, Phileas, actually conducted a survey of registrars in August of 2010. Our goal of just trying to understand that channel and what those people thought about DNSSEC. So some of our findings are, you know, generally people think it's a good idea, but preaching to the choir here, and a lot of people will say something's a good idea because you can always, you know, make it sound good when you're trying to sell it to them. The question is whether you can actually get them to want to do anything with it. So it's clear that people, there's a fair amount of expertise that still has to grow and be available. And we were able to identify some issues in the registrar channel as to what it means to deploy DNSSEC. Now, I apologize that these slides, unfortunately, one detail I forgot to include on the slides was an actual pointer to this readiness report that we had done. It is actually freely available. If you go to Afilias's website, www.afilias.info, and you go to the search box and you just say registrar DNSSEC readiness, it will take you right to the report. And you'll be able to find a link where you can actually download the entire PDF and see it. But next slide, please. I pulled out a couple of the statistics. It shows you all the questions in this document and all the actual results that we got. But I wanted to follow a couple of things here, which I think are still relevant. This was still only 6 months ago. It's interesting here, the question of asking registrars, when will you offer DNSSEC? And you find that 32% have no plans to offer it in the next 12 months, meaning basically all of 2011. Slightly more, 37% say that they will have something in 2011. Next slide. But what's interesting is, in spite of the fact that they think they want to have something, they really don't know what that is and what they're going to do to get it. So we had two particular questions here about, you know, will you buy it from a signing server, so will you buy it from a registry or DNS provider? And it's pretty telling, in my mind, the percentages there. 45%, you know, don't know that whether they'll buy it from the managed service provider, and you've got 62% there that don't know if they'll buy it from a DNS provider or a registry. So I think that people have, you know, a desire and an interest in wanting to do the right thing, but they don't know how to do that. Next slide. So I guess what you're hearing up here is we all have our own version of a signing service to offer, and we're calling ours one-click DNSSEC. So next slide. The feature about it is, in fact, that it works with just one click. If you get the managed services from us that have DNSSEC included, you can just have your domain name, and you click in one spot, and everything is taken care of. All of your key management is done, your key rollover, coordination with registrars. I mean, since we're a registry service provider offering that service, then with the right relationships, we can actually, you know, coordinate the insertion of your DS records in for you and make all of that work with the system too. So that becomes a nice way to fill that gap. As others this morning have identified, there is that gap of the relationship between your DNS provider and your registrar in getting your key material up into the registry. Okay, so next slide. This is just a quick look for completeness in the set of slides about who Afilias is. These are the, you know, the 15 TLDs we support and 18 million domains under management. And then the last slide, if you move on, you know, if anybody has any other questions or real issues that we don't cover here, we do have a booth downstairs where other folks who are marketing people, not me, will be there and answer your questions. So if you have a technical question, you should bring it up here and I will answer it for you. Thank you.
Thank you. So moving along quickly, Peter from Your ID, thanks.
Are you going to click or do I click myself?
You can click yourself as soon as I am.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Just waiting here a second for my presentation to be found again.
It was coming by itself before. I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, well, you hit it. Okay, good afternoon. For those that don't know UID, it's the .eu registry. So just one of the other registries that's sitting on this table today. Actually, the whole of my presentation is sort of the same thing as has been said before and probably will be said after me, so I'll try to concentrate on the little bit of differences to anticipate the question from Steve to actually highlight the differences instead of the similarities. Just to introduce where we're coming from and where we want to, where we want to go is a typical setup. You have on your left side, that's your left side as well, yes, a registry, which is sort of orange on the right side. You have a registrar. They have a whole lot of infrastructure in place to actually register the domain name and actually make it work out there on the internet. So you have a registration engine that puts it in a database, and then for the .eu specific case, we have something called Dynamic Updater that continuously watches the database and feeds it to a hidden master that then actually feeds it to public slaves, with or without DNSSEC. We added the DNSSEC part, so Dynamic Updater actually feeds it to the hidden master that signs it on the fly and actually pushes it out. On the other side, you have the registrar that has a very similar process in place. It has a provisioning process that actually does the DNS nitty-gritty details of getting some sort of a zone in place that then gets pushed out to the public slaves. And on the front end, you have something called a registration engine that actually talks to the registry site via EPP or a secure website, in our case, to actually register the domain name. So if a registrar wants to add DNSSEC, the whole picture becomes more, well, filled with all sorts of arrows and blocks and things like that. The gist of it is that actually there is something called a signing process that actually sits in between the provisioning process and the actual zone getting out of the on the internet that actually takes care of everything. But the important part here to note is that there is that upward red arrow that actually talks to the somehow to the registry to have the keys that actually are used to sign the zone actually get to the registry and to be included as a DS record in the parent, I would say. So, moving along, the DNSSEC signing service as envisaged by URIT is that actually what we do or what we want to do is the bump in the wire, has been called it before. We break that link from that registrar hidden master to feed its public slaves and actually deviate the zone to a zone signer module that actually feeds it to a hidden master that then pushes it out again to the public slave. So we take in the zone, sign it, and push it out again to the slaves. So for the registrar, it's just one small step, get the zone to the signing module of the signing service and actually receive the signed zone again from the hidden master. And there's a whole lot of extra arrows, most importantly the purple dash dotted line from the zone signer to the registration engine of the registry, because the signing service obviously has the same problem if it generates a key and signs a zone with it, that if it's a KSK, then it actually needs to push that to the registry for inclusion in the parent. So all that will be taken care of very much as Matt before me actually explained. The little blue arrow, the dashed line from the zone signer to the public slaves, is just one extra check to make sure that actually the signed zone is out there before that the keys are actually published in the parent zone. So what are the goals of the DNSSEC signing service as put in place by URIT? The idea is to reduce the need for increased resources any which way. That could be human resources, because a registrar has some sort of a learning curve to go through. He needs to get his mind around what is DNSSEC, how do I cope with it, what do I do, and so on. There is the admin part of it, the continuous re-signing zone, key management, key rollover, and all that sort of thing. And obviously, there will be some sort of a hardware impact. You know, you need some machines to actually do this. Another goal is to minimize changes to the registrar infrastructures, both on the DNS platform as well as on the registration platform. So actually make as little changes to anything the registrar has in place for probably the last 10 or 15 years, make as little possible changes whatsoever. Automation is one of the keywords to actually prevent human error. If you automate it, you will have some sort of a guarantee that it always functions in the way that you want it to function. Obviously, security is a big issue. If you're going to sign zones, you actually want to make sure that the zone that gets fed to you to be signed, that actually is a real zone and not something else, and vice versa. So that's one of the key aspects there. And as long as we can keep it on a standard level, that's things that, you know, are actually used by other registries and registrars out there in the world, that would be great. So what would the typical flow be? During domain name registration, the registrar actually provides a sort of a flag to say, yes, this domain name should be under management of the signing service or should not, so the classical trade-off, yes or no. Also, there should be some sort of information about the hidden master. Where can the signing service actually go and transfer in the zone file? These keys to actually make the zone transfer secure. And actually also the IP address or addresses of the public slaves where the signed zone eventually gets pushed to. And again, these keys to actually make that transfer secure and safe again towards the public slaves of the registrar. And from that moment onwards, actually, it's the signing service that takes control of the whole nitty-gritty admin, I would say. So where are we? .eu got signed in September 2010. We got at that moment we got the DS in the root zone. Actually, this zone was signed quite before that. We also did it in a sort of staged way. First, we signed the zone. We didn't accept any DS records from registrars. Then we added them, and then we got included in the root zone. We're in a sort of proof of concept phase, so we're designing and building the system. It's not quite done yet, but we're close. We're going to deploy it in the live.eu zone, so we're going to actually make this happen on the real .eu thing. And obviously, to actually test something real life, we have a few registrars that are actually very interested to see this happen and actually want to work with us to see what and how and where. As a last thing, I would say some potential site results. There you saw that the registrar needs to mention the IP addresses of the hidden master, the public slaves, the TSIG keys, that little flag, just put it on or off. Actually, one of the ways of doing this is to communicate via EPP, so we envisage to have some sort of an extension that might be standardized in IETF ways to actually, you know, not reinvent the same thing each time when you progress down the table here. So it might be nice to have actually something that is the same whatever registry that you talk to. Another thing is the DNSSEC delegated key management interface. That's actually the interface that the signing service will use to talk to our backend to actually upload the keys, manage the keys, and things like that. As long as we're building that, we actually might make that available also to, for instance, the DNS hoster, which is not necessarily the registrar. So in that case, the DNS hoster doesn't have to pass via the registrar to actually do the key management, but can directly talk to the registry to do upload of DS key, DS records. And a potential site result, a last one I would say, and something that's rather hot in the community as well, how do you do transfers from one registrar to another when the zone is signed? How do you do that without losing resolving and losing signing? If we, as a registry, are the signing service provider for the domain name, that actually gives us the opportunity to actually make transfers ripple-free under DNSSEC signed zones. And I think that was the last slide. Yes. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Simon?
Yep.
The signing service for Nominet.
Thanks, Jenny. Next slide, please. Thanks. I was rather mischievously trying to think what would differentiate our service from everybody else on the panel. And so I think as we're not quite as far advanced as everybody else, so we're still in design phase. So I think ours is going to be a very British DNSSEC service, and records are going to be signed by the Queen rather than by the. And you'll get free fish and chips with every registration. So, no, but I mean, the reality of it is that, you know, we're the same. You know, it's a bump in the wire service. It's going to work in the same way as most other folk is going to work. And I think that's a good thing, that these services are going to be pretty standard. So basically, we're the same. We take unsigned zones and we return signed zones. Next slide, please, Jim. So I think just a question for us is why would we create a signing service? Well, we wanted to firstly increased DNSSEC adoption across the UK. We've got a relatively sceptical registrar population about DNSSEC. We wanted to make it as easy as possible for them to adopt this and get moving. And they've been very positive about the noises we've been making around it. We see it benefiting for us, both our large and our small registrars. I think our large have said they'll use it as a kind of stepping stone service. So it'll kind of fundamentally allow them to dip the toe in the water with DNSSEC, try it out, see how it flies, if you like, without investing significantly in infrastructure. And we think the small folk, bear in mind what's unique about UK is we've got 3,500 registrars, and some of those have only got 1,000 domains. So the small folk will use this as a very cheap and straightforward way to implement. Next slide, please. That's strange. We're missing some graphics. That's a bit odd. Never mind. It's the same service, really. Fundamentally, we've got two flavours, actually. We've got what we call a sort of simple signing service, and this was from a plea from our registrar community to make this as standard as possible and allow them to possibly, if they not just sign their .co.uk domains, but also possibly other TLDs as well. So very simply, we're fundamentally taking an unsigned zone and passing back a signed zone and allowing folk to put their DS record where they want to. Next slide, please. Again, strangely missing, never mind. The other thing is our sort of more complete signing service will also insert the DS records into the UK zone as well. So as you know, we've got .uk and .co.uk, so that will provide that additional service. Next slide, please. One of the things I wanted just to address is we obviously Nominet, amongst a number of other folk here, have been involved in designing the Open DNSSEC product. And I think when we announced we were going to launch something like this, people were saying, well, you were really committed to Open DNSSEC. Does that mean you're not committed to Open DNSSEC? Absolutely not. We are fully supportive of both, and we see them both having an equal place. We see Open DNSSEC as a great solution for people who want to create their own DNSSEC infrastructure and manage their own keys and use that. And we see a signing service as a way of getting DNSSEC up and running quickly. And we foresee being quite possible to start with our signing service and then move to an Open DNSSEC infrastructure. So we're completely supportive of both ways. Next slide, please. And that's it for me. Thank you.
This is moving along very, very nicely. Bill, you get to bring up the rear here.
Okay, so again, to focus on the differences rather than the similarities, I think probably the main difference with us is the type of organization that we are. We are a global not-for-profit infrastructure support organization rather than a for-profit DNS services organization. So as a result, that means that the service that we're providing is focused specifically at ccTLDs, not registrars, and we're very much aimed at doing knowledge transfer and helping the ccTLD gain operational experience and eventually transition into operating their DNSSEC signing internally rather than having an ongoing dependency on us. So this was a result of a bit of a collaboration which took the form of ICANN allowing Rick Layam to work with us to bring the service up, which allowed us to replicate exactly the root signing mechanisms and practices. And in turn, we're taking the whole tree of documents. As most of you probably realize, the hard work here is in the key management and the business practices and so forth. The technological part of doing a DNSSEC signing is, it's real work, but it's relatively straightforward. So we're taking that entire tree of documents and open source publishing it under Creative Commons license so that anyone who wants to use that can satisfy their auditors without having to generate it all themselves and go through their own legal reviews. Yeah.
Well, I'll just talk this way. Hi, I'm Rick Lamb from ICANN. I just wanted to emphasize how we arrived at this. One of ICANN's stated goals lately has been to accelerate DNSSEC deployment, and we were looking for ways to do this while still maintaining, a good system, a trustworthy system. And so this was a perfect opportunity for someone who had the right security models in place, namely PCH, to do this. The relationship with ICANN is, just like Bill said, is just a little bit of my help. There's no formal contract or anything like that. He's his organization is just very well placed to help this happen, and it is very much of a stepping stone. I'll let you go back to that.
Again, our approach is to have this shared secure signing platform that any ccTLD can use that includes knowledge transfer component to help them begin to take on each of the parts of the process themselves as they're comfortable doing so. The idea here was to replicate the route exactly, largely so that auditors would not find any separate questions to ask, right? If they're happy with the process that the root signing uses, then they'll be happy with this one. No real differences. Like the rest of our services, this is provided without respect to ability to pay. We don't charge for these things, so consequently, it's funded out of our overhead, and we hope that it doesn't grow too wildly successful. Modular system, again, so that people can take on holding the KSKs themselves, generating the ZSKs themselves, handing those off to us. Benefits I've already sort of gone through. Transition path back and forth with documentation and checklists and so forth to make auditors happy about how it is that a ccTLD would move onto the platform and how they move off of the platform, and, you know, guaranteeing no lock-in and so forth. The platform probably looks like many of the others. Again, particularly like the root one, for level 4 HSMs, 2 online signers in Zurich and San Jose, 2 offline KSKs in San Jose and Singapore. So we're trying to have diversity in the locations. The Zurich location is being hosted by Switch, the Swiss Research and Education Network. The Singaporean location is being hosted by the Singaporean Communications Ministry. And the Americas location is being hosted by Equinix. So we have a governmental agency, an educational agency, and a private sector. And obviously this is kind of building on top of our global Anycas platform. So there's a degree of integration if you want it. If you don't want it, they're completely separable components. Again, the level 4 HSMs sitting next to the signers or the KSK masters inside a class 5 IPS. That in turn is inside a SCIF, that in turn is inside a Tier 4 data center or the equivalent in the governmental or educational facility. The San Jose facility is there. The Zurich and Singapore facilities should be built out by the time of the next ICANN meeting. In Singapore, we're targeting, obviously, being able to do a key signing ceremony there at the next ICANN meeting. This is actually a big animated thing in the... Yeah, I'll ignore that. Okay, there's the static version of it. No real big surprises there. The signer, of course, the bottleneck in this whole system, performance-wise, is the rate at which the HSMs can perform the signing operations. So the first big performance gain we have there is by doing NSEC 3. As we go forward, we will probably wind up parallelizing operations by adding additional HSMs. But basically, the signer has to cycle through different TLDs that are sending us IXFRs. So the IXFRs will accumulate sort of one queue per ccTLD. The signer will come around, sign that queue, and spit it out. And right now, the larger ones that we have, the sort of 350, 400 delegation zones are in the sort of 3, 4, 5 minute range. At worst, we actually have some graphing online that shows them mostly clustering around 1 minute. Yeah, obvious stuff. Okay, in the live demo, that was for Thursday. So, okay. Thank you very much. Sorry.
Good. Monday. Thank you.
Monday.
we're good. We started a little bit late. We were pressed for time, and we overcame it. And now we've got the embarrassment of having a rather nice amount of time for questions or for going out and exploring the city. No, we don't have that much time. So let me open the floor, both for this session, the signing services in particular, and I don't see any reason why we can't have a broader set of questions and discussion if we want to. We have on the clock 35 minutes, and I'm perfectly happy to bring things to a close if we're at a natural point, but let's see what the discussion brings. So have at it.
Hi, my name is Anton van Vuren. I work for SIDN. I have a question for Jurrit and Nominet, because in the presentation that they gave us and in the outlines, they made a mistake, or I feel it as a mistake, that it's the registrars that run DNS services, which in my opinion is not true. Registrars only perform administrative actions. So my question actually is, are you going to do something in your administrative interface so that DNS operators can enter your interface instead of the registrars?
Yeah, really good question. Two things. What we find in the UK is that the bulk of our registrars are also DNS operators as well. So that,
that's true.
That
but in the model, they aren't. Yeah,
exactly. But we will also, as well as having EPP interfaces and so forth, we will also provide an online portal for people who do manage their own DNS records to be able to access the service directly. So we see it as operating for both.
And maybe some extra information there. First of all, same thing for .eu, most of the registrars are actually hosting the DNS, which does not change the fact that indeed there is a sizable amount of DNS hosts which are separate from the registrars. And for those, they still have to pass via the registrar to actually get their NS sets into our zone. And if you remember my slide, actually there is just some extra piece of information, the IP address of the hidden master, the IP address of the slaves where we should distribute to, and if the registrar kicks that into us, then we don't really care if the DNS hoster is actually the registrar or something separate from the registrar.
Yeah. So my question was actually, in order to accommodate this, can you, for example, give the registrar an extra user ID for the DNS operator to use to interface with your system?
Okay, that's another question. And yes, if you remember the last slide, the very last line where we have that delegated key management interface that we're actually going to make available to the DNS hoster. And it's, of course, the registrar that has control over it. Does he give it out, yes or no, some sort of a security mechanism like a password or something like that? But at that moment in time, it's a DNS hoster that directly can interface with the registry to do the key management. But it has nothing to do with the signing service as such.
And so can a registrar handle out multiple of these?
Actually, on a per domain name basis, we envisage that for the moment as having some sort of credentials, user ID, passwords, certificates. We don't really know what yet, but he could hand that out to any party, including a separate DNS hoster or the registrant that hands it over to the DNS hoster or something like that. And again, we are very much, if I can continue quickly, Steve, there, we are very interested in seeing parties that actually want to work with us to actually have some sort of a standardization process in place there, that actually that interface that is given out to DNS hosters, registrants, and so on, is actually something that would be the same for any registry out there in the world. Thank you.
Let me express personal thanks for you raising that question. The distinction between a DNS operator and a registrar who happens to be offering DNS services as part of his thing is one that has bedeviled and caused confusion at many points along the way. In the ICANN environment, there is They're accredited registrars, and contractual rules governing the behavior of the registrar, but it only governs the administrative transactions, as you had alluded to, does not cover the DNS operations. And so we've found, when we've tried to entangle the technical aspects of the subtleties of how do you transfer DNS operations for assigned zone, for example, that even the terminology has been confusing because we needed to untangle it. So I'm very, very pleased that you asked that question. This is, as you see, you got good answers from knowledgeable people here, but I think it's going to require just a little more attention and repeat activity to bring this up to the level where everybody has that clarity of understanding. So thank you. Simon.
Actually, just to echo Peter's comments, it's a plea really to everybody here on this panel, as well as anybody, the rest of you, and anybody thinking of launching a DNSSEC signing services. I think standardization is really important as much as we can. We want this to be a place where people can use multiple signing services if they wish, or they can skip between different people's signing services. We see that having a flexible market for this being really important to its adoption. So if it's a difficult job to move from one person's signing service to another because you've got to recraft all of your systems, then that's not a great story. So we're very keen on looking at trying to standardize as much as possible the way in which you interact with these services, whether it's through EPP or whether it's through web interfaces or whatever. So yeah, very much.
Would it be helpful to you if we started to impose some standardization rules from ICANN? No, never mind. A joke for those who understood it. Never mind if you didn't. Other comments, other thoughts, any other topics that you all want to bring up for discussion? Anybody on the panel? Oh, boy, people are eager to get out of here.
Question? Okay, so if there are no questions, it maybe it's because you all already have signed zones or you know exactly what you're going to do to sign your zone. Maybe we could explore that space a little bit, Steve, with the participants here.
Oh, interesting idea. All right, audience participation time. How many of you have signed your zones?
Don't forget to raise your hand.
Yeah. Well, of course we've signed our zones. How many of you plan to sign your zones? Good.
I'll have to raise my hand again because I'm going to sign future ones.
How many of you do not plan to sign your zone? How many of you have no idea what a sign zone is?
Yeah, right.
Oliver back there was co-chair of the DNS Extensions Working Group, and in his public service job, and works for me. At least I pay him during the day job. And I can tell you for sure he has no idea what a sign zone. No. Oh, and Peter too. Good. Wes.
Wes Hardiker, Sparta. I signed my own zones because there wasn't any signing services when I got started. Mine runs out of a makefile. I sign a number of personal and a number of work-related zones, all managed under one belt, and it works just fine. That being said, I have a number of zones that would be really bad to go dark. And if I was going to consider not doing it myself anymore, which I'm obviously capable of doing it technically because I've been doing it for a while, it would be because from a management perspective, and this has been alluded to in a number of slide sets, I would prefer somebody that has a very large background in managing the data, making sure that it's good, making sure that the DS record never gets published to org when the child is, you know, no longer has a key for that. Not that I did that last week. That's the real service that I see in registries and registrars and DNS signing services out there, is the ability to make sure that my zone doesn't go dark. In the same way that people do it to get, you know, propagated DNS all over the world and to make sure that their DNS servers never go dark, it's going to be the same thing for DNSSEC. Yes, I can do it myself. I wrote some of the tools that help do it. That doesn't mean that my little tiny box is quite the right production place for large zones.
I was going to thank you very much for that. I was going to suggest that I was going to ask for ideas to include in the next DNSSEC workshop in Singapore or the one after that. I am hereby asking for that. But in addition, let me ask more specifically, would it be interesting to try to have a panel on things not to do or mistakes we have made, a sort of accumulation of hard lessons of the little things that could go wrong that bite you, and have those aggregated in some experience from the early operators? So that's one thought, and interested in responses either on that or the more general question of what topics would be useful and productive to bring up in this section.
Hi, Paul Wouters, Excellence. I had a question for the people running signing services. Are there any provisions in place to avoid coercion of revealing the private key to your local government? Are you thinking about jurisdictions of where to put these keys, or can you assure me that a signer service is in a certain jurisdiction?
In our case, local government is a special kind of thing because it's the European Commission, so it's something a little bit weird, I would say. The real answer is we're in a proof of concept phase. We haven't been there yet. We actually want to put something out where we actually want to see it work and actually work with our registrars to see what they have to say about it. And that moment in time, or a little bit before that, probably we'll start seeing the whole nitty-gritty details. Also, one of the things that you raised just now, but we're not there yet. First, let's get the technical sides running and then see if we can actually, it's worthwhile continuing in this path. That's a general idea.
I think it's a very helpful question to have on the table, but I think it would be also helpful to have a degree of clarification. So it's my understanding, and I seek responses if I've got the wrong picture, that when one uses the modern hardware signing modules, that compromising the private key is essentially impossible in the common sense notion of compromise, of exposing it to air and having somebody run off and use it in another box and sign things. So part of my question is validation. Is that correct? And then the other aspect is that the coercion question then I think becomes transformed into, could a government or somebody else coerce the signing service to inappropriately sign something that shouldn't have been signed, and sort of get the same effect. So the question does not go away just because there's hardware protection, but it gets transformed into analyzing where the points of entry or points of attack might be.
So that's one reason why we're doing two separate parallel signing processes, one in Zurich and one in San Jose, so that we can have obvious to the public two processes under separate jurisdictions, each of which should be producing exactly the same result.
How do you ensure synchrony? No, it wasn't in Zurich, sorry.
Yes. Yes, there's code around that.
So I'll offer a similar response to Bill. I mean, we have hardware modules. We have not had to deal with the question of different jurisdictions wanting the private keys, but the immediate reaction would be one of, you simply can't have it. There's no way to get at it because the box would simply make that go away. So that it would be interesting to see that tested at some point. And then, like Bill, we have facilities in multiple places. The signers are in multiple places, so that's part of also an additional factor in dealing with this. And those boxes that we use have synchronization facilities built into them. I mean, even Matt said earlier in the HSMs that they use, I'll speak for that, about you store encrypted blobs, which only the boxes can deal with, and then you can move those blobs around, but you can't get access to them. So that's how you hide the stuff.
Good. Yep.
Yes. I feel that
Say your name first.
Jaap Akkerhuis, Nelnet Labs. And I feel that the problem is a little bit similar as the RIRs, which are doing that with IPKI and offer to host the keys and all that stuff. I mean, it's a more generic problem if you, source this out to a third party. You know, you have to do some risk analysis about what the party is really doing. I mean, when it's under different jurisdictions than yourself, you know, it's something just should be part of the discussion before you start to use the service.
Thank you. Paul?
Just a clarification again. Remember that for signing services, you have the unsigned zone, so you don't need to have a compromised key or a private. You don't need to have access to the private key. You just change the unsigned zone and then let it sign in the regular process. So there's no need for access to any private HSM keys.
Right. I think that's comparable to the point that I was making, that you could sort of misuse the service subvert the service by putting in data that shouldn't be signed if you can get access to the process there.
Right, but it also means that, for instance, all these signing services can sign a different version of the zone that they then give to someone else to use somewhere on the leaf. So this doesn't have to be necessarily published worldwide. They could sign a private copy with different data.
Right.
Great. Craig Spiesel, Online Trust Alliance. This is more as a comment and an observation. It's really intended for people outside this room. And it really gets down to, when I speak to you about DNSSEC, is trying to really articulate what is the business value proposition? Why should a business care? And so we talk about a lot of the technical issues there, but I think that's an opportunity for us to really articulate and as a group kind of resonate and repeat and get that and communicate. So I'd like to know your thoughts and if any actions to really help out there and really market DNSSEC effectively.
The question is exactly to whom DNSSEC is being marketed. I think that's another part of that question.
I just want to add a comment, too. I think we heard part of the answer this morning when we were talking about Mozilla and Fedora, and so the putting the DNSSEC. I think that it needs to be available. It needs to be incorporated. The validation process needs to be available to you to help promote the need to sign it. So you have this double-edged sword of things that have to happen in parallel. So I think that's also part of the answer.
Yeah, one of the challenges that DNSSEC has had and the technical community in particular has struggled with for quite a while is how do you describe a value, in particular, of the correctness of a name? And some organizations who have had bad things happen with their name, whether it was through a hijack or something in the whole registration process where they lost control of their name, organizations like that sometimes completely fall off the internet functionally, and only then do they seem to really recognize the value of the name. And so, as Steve mentioned a little bit ago, it really oftentimes does depend upon who it is being marketed towards, because a name and a presence on the internet is important in varying degrees, but it's also important in different ways to various organizations. And so, if you think about DNS being really an infrastructure piece that's historically kind of been buried down, you actually see the name, but you don't, as a user, recognize what goes on and how important it is. Now, as people start to attack names, and DNSSEC is the counter to that, those attacks are what has to be envisioned, described in a way that's of value to those being used. And there's not really a simple answer. One of the things I think we've tried to do is identify some communities that are of particular interest. And now the work that's been referred to a couple of times today, the Dane work and the IETF, it looks like that may also produce some easily identifiable advantages of making use of DNSSEC for multiple and different business opportunities.
Yeah, I might, you know, I know PayPal's been doing some great work in this area, and, you know, finding those North Stars, so to speak, those early adopters. And we had this, you know, we worked on EV SSL certificates, similar cases, a chicken and the egg. Dave Crocker talked earlier about DKIM, same thing as well. If no one's checking, what's the value of signing? So I think there's just other areas. I'm certainly happy to work with anyone in that area of really trying to promote that as we go out there, as the .com is signed later this month. We have an opportunity to do so.
Let me ask you one question. If you could be so kind as to give some thought to, is there value of having a panel at the next Singapore meeting that would try to address some of these issues? And do you have any suggestions in that space? Not necessarily at this moment, but if you could think about it and pass it to us, that would be great.
I actually suggest we have an opportunity before Singapore as we get out there and to get a message. And maybe some work like what some of us did with APWG and other groups, try to synthesize what that message is. And so, because again, there's a lot of confusion as I talk to security professionals outside. What is it? When is it going to be? Why should I care? And where is it stacked rank in the priorities from a security perspective? So, thank you.
Thank you. I think we have come to the appropriate time to give ourselves a collective round of applause. Thank you, everybody, for participating in this extended session here. And we're rolling right along with DNSSEC becoming a major part of the landscape. Thank you all.